The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So welcome, everyone. Nice to see you. And welcome. I don't think I've met you before. Emily? Hi, Emily. I'm Tanya. You're welcome to move up to another seat if you'd like. So we're going to move into studying the five faculties, the five powers. There's this lovely sutta that I'm going to start by sort of preparing the ground for the introduction of the five faculties. So I'm not sure we'll really get to those tonight, but we will cover very important considerations, and the importance, in part, we'll begin to study the importance of them. And in fact, I'll give you a little sort of, let me just sort of give you like this big forecasting. So there's this great sutta, which I'll be sharing, and it talks about, you know, how to have a freedom from suffering. And it talks about how important practice is in this very poignant way to doing so. And that it names a few of the important practices. And these five faculties, which are become the five powers, are listed in that set of practices that the Buddha says, this is what needs to be cultivated. And this sutta really emphasizes this idea of cultivation, which is in a lovely way. And then these five faculties are actually called, also known as Indriya. And Indriya is... Indra, it comes from, the root is Indra, which is this Hindu god that played a very important role in really his power, his capacity, and what he did for humans was huge. He removed a lot of obstacles. So this is the name of these five characteristics or powers are, you know, named after this god of Indra. Right, which is really kind of a big deal, yeah. And there's some other fun ways that these five powers are referenced and talked about. So I'm hoping to just spread out this and have a lot of fun, but you can let me know if I get too detailed, okay? Well, yeah. Okay. And I'll just say that the five powers are the typical words that are used, and I'm going to give some kind of a broader, more names to them than this, but our faith, energy, mindfulness, concentration, and wisdom. Faith, energy, mindfulness, concentration, and wisdom. And when we talk about faith, there'll be a huge range of thinking about faith from like trust, faith, to confidence, you know, like sort of this continuum with energy, you know, kind of the kind of energy, not too much, not too little. There's a lot. There's energy is necessary for everything we do. Mindfulness, which is, if you think about these are five, right in the middle is mindfulness. Very, very important and balancing. The concentration, you know, the calm is another word. And collected, calm, collected, unified, concentration, and wisdom, which has to do with not book learning as much as clear seeing into the directness of our experience and understanding the way suffering is created and how we're freed from it. So this is where we're, the territory we'll be exploring together, which I feel excited about. So hopefully you will too. Any questions about that so far or comments? Okay. So this sutta is called The Chick, the Ads, and the Ship. And it starts, as suttas always do, in this way, at Savatthi, so the location, you know, of where this occurred. There the Blessed One said, I tell you, monks, it is for one who knows and sees that there's the ending of affluence. And you can just think about the word suffering right there. And I'll say a little bit about what the affluence are, but so I'll tell you, monks, it is one for who knows and sees that there is the end of suffering. And so what are the affluence? Let me just sort of define it for you a little bit. And I want to keep it very simple, okay? Like, it can be very not-making in the minds when we try and understand some of the more unusual words or, you know, concepts. And the practice is not about concepts. The practice is about direct experience. So this is why I want to kind of keep it simple. So they could be thought of as the main causes of suffering. You can think about it as latent tendencies or conditioning, habits, patterns. Things that influence mental proliferation. Who here suffers from mental proliferation? Yes. Okay. All right. And the main three roots of all of this are greed, right? For desire for, it's just this constant, all of us have it, we need it, except for, you know, we have way too much of it. This latent tendency of desire for sense pleasure, right? Just wanting to feel good to wanting to feel really good. Anger, hatred, so this latent tendency of aversion, of not liking things that are painful, right? For example, of course. And ignorance or delusion. Ignorance is sort of just completely ignoring or not seeing, right? And delusion can be this elaborate thing that our mind creates. And this is, again, it's like just a latent tendency. It's something that we all can easily space out, yeah? Space out. Maybe just think about it that simply. So the Buddha goes on to say, for one who knows and sees that there's the end of this kind, I'm just going to use the word suffering, okay? Just as a bookmark, right? Such as, you know, for one who knows and sees the way that it is, right, and sees the ending of this. And then he says, even though this wish, so we may all want the suffering to end. Do we all want the suffering to end? Yeah, right? Well, so we can want that. And a monk who dwells and, you know, sort of is a monk, he's put on robes, he's gone to live with the Buddha, and he dwells and he wants this wish, but he isn't devoted to developing himself. He might say, that my mind might be released from suffering through lack of clinging. He might be saying this, he might be talking about this, but his mind is not released. His mind won't be released because he wants it to be, because he isn't devoted to the training. And so the Buddha says, why is it? You know, and he says, from lack of developing. And the things that you have to develop, among that, two of the things are the five bases of power, the five faculties. Those are both the same list, but they're in different states. And then the Buddha gives this great simile, and he says, Suppose a hen has 8, 10, or 12 eggs. If she doesn't cover them rightly, warm them rightly, incubate them rightly, then even though this wish may occur to her that my chicks might break through the eggshells with their spiked claws or beaks and hatch out safely, even though she wishes that, still it is not possible that the chicks will break out through the eggshells. Right? Why is that? Because the hen has not covered them rightly, has not warmed them rightly, has not incubated them rightly. In the same way, even though this wish may occur to a monk who dwells without devoting himself to development, oh, that my mind might be released from suffering through lack of clinging. Still, his mind is not released from the suffering through lack of clinging. Why is that? From lack of developing. It should be said, lack of developing what? And again, this list. So I love this chick metaphor because I think about how many things in my life. Oh, yes, I want to learn how to do that. Oh, yes, I want to go there. Or, you know, like it's a lot of times it's about doing things, but it's also about developing. You know, I want to, I don't know, you know, like so many things, right? And if I don't devote myself to training, I'm not going to get to do the thing that I want to do. It's not possible. We have to train. I also love that he uses this idea of eggs and a chick, because the nurturing, the warmth, and he mentions the warmth of the sitting on the eggs. They need to be warmed. And the eggs, you know, the chickens don't stay on the eggs constantly, right? Like they're on and off, but they have to sit on them enough to keep them warm so that they can, you know, mature, so they can grow. They need the warmth, and we need warmth in our practice for it to grow. It is so essential for us to bring kindness, you know, to bring that allowing attitude as opposed to, you know, a controlling attitude or a critical attitude or perfectionist attitude. What happens when you sit down and try to meditate perfectly? What happens? Dukkha. Yes, Lauren, dukkha. It's very unpleasant. And maybe in the beginning it might be fun because your mind gets very, you know, maybe you have fantasies and imagine how it will feel. And, you know, you get kind of excited and carried away by this really a delusional fantasy about what it's going to be like. And that might seem kind of pleasant. But when you really are trying to have a perfect meditation experience, you're trying to create something and you get, it's not pleasant. Unless I'm wrong. Anybody want to counter me, say how it's been different? Okay, all right. So we all agree. How is this landing? Richard, do we have the mics? Okay, great, great. How is this landing? What is it bringing up for you? What do you know? Like, are you feeling like, oh no, I have to practice 24 hours a day? Are you feeling like, you know, oh, this is inspiring? How is this landing? Anybody willing to share? Thank you, Lisa. There's a mic right there.
Thank you. Sorry, I have some allergies, so.
Great. I'm sorry about that, yeah.
So how is it landing? I would say training to get anywhere is sort of expected.
Uh-huh.
So to me, that's kind of what I do in since I was a kid all the time for whatever I wanted to achieve. So I just feel like it's conditioning and training and kind of the way it is.
Kind of the way it is.
And okay. The ups and downs of that where you're, you know, the wins, the losses, the plateaus, the frustrations, the growth, that kind of like just the way it is.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I was wondering if you could give an example. I just wanted to hear that of a the opposite of the critical, hardcore training mind, like a sloppy mind, you would say, or how would that be in meditation? If that were,
Okay, great. Okay, yeah, no, I can do that now because nobody else jumping up, and we can just see. So I'm putting a bookmark in my mind about something that I want to come back to. So just help me remember bookmark, okay? So the opposite could be a mind that is really into the delusional, like the fantasy kind of mind, right? So you're just sort of daydreaming and drifting and just sort of like allowing the fantasies to just be, you know, sweet or whatever it is, just sort of lost without being aware of what's happening or the impact or what you're doing. So that would be one example. Another would be, you know, sort of maybe even just people sitting down and just thinking. They actually just sit down and they just engage in their thinking, actively thinking during a meditation. And sometimes people will consider, they like their idea of meditation because it's their time to think and process, you know. And another, like you said, kind of I mentioned, was sort of just being too slothful, right? So not putting enough effort into keeping, really it's like, you know how with the five faculties, there's five different things here that we're talking about tracking and being attentive to, right? And cultivating, you know, bringing our arousing our faith or our hope, our confidence at the beginning of meditation or when we come to meditate or when we think about our practice, sort of to support this sense of it's not futile. I believe, I have confidence that this, you know, this will help me suffer less. Go ahead. Yeah, great, thank you, and use the mic.
So you would say, because sometimes we sit down and we do think.
Yeah.
But we're making the effort to say, we're thinking.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, versus think, and you're not even.
Right.
That would be, okay.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So when we're meditating, we've got to have a certain amount of confidence or faith when we sit down to want to apply our attention, and then we need to bring a certain amount of energy to this task, and we don't want to, so this is what we were just talking about, not too little and not too much, right? And then mindfulness is kind of established once we start, okay, yeah, I'm aware, I'm here, and we, you know, maybe drift in and out, but we're continually working on maintaining that mindfulness. And then what happens is that the concentration starts to cultivate with moment-to-moment awareness. As we stay connected to what's happening, the mind gets more collected, more calm. And then as we are calm enough to see clearly what's happening in the mind, we develop and grow our wisdom. So,
and don't forget you said bookmark.
Okay. So back to the chicks. Another thing that's really fun to think about is, so the Buddha says 8, 10, or 12 eggs. Right? Why? But, you know, okay. And, you know, chickens don't have to do a whole lot, do they? This is kind of, to me, another really interesting teaching. you know, the chickens need to eat and do their thing and come back and sit, right? They don't have to, like, puff and huff and try and get hot and, you know, make the eggs get really hot. They just have to sit. So it's kind of the same thing that we're talking about here, Lisa, which is that, you know, the chicken has to be diligent enough and sit enough, but just sit. They don't have to buy a heater and plug it in or run on a treadmill and get hot to sit down. They just have to sit. They just have to sit. Enough. And then what happens? The eggs, most of them, hopefully, the chickens will hatch. They get liberated, those little baby chicks. And maybe liberation is a little bit of the same thing. Maybe there's a little bit of the same thing that can happen, that if we just, if we sit enough, if we practice enough, and we do so without too much effort, too little, with enough mindfulness, with enough calm, with enough wisdom, enough. Maybe if we do this with enough and we are diligent, it just happens. Awakening just happens. The chicken is not teaching the baby chick how to awaken or crack out of its shell. The baby chick knows how. And there's something in us that knows how to get free too. So this is another brilliant part of the simile that is just so inspiring to me. Does this make sense to everybody? And even if the chicken doesn't know that they're sitting on the eggs to hatch them, which they must, right? Or they wouldn't do it, or something. I don't know, you know, there's enough. Yeah, I know. If they sit on them, they hatch. So the same is true. You know, if we don't have to believe necessarily that we can experience Nibbana, but we can still experience Nibbana if we practice well and consistently and enough. It can happen like the chicks break through the egg. It can happen to anyone. Can happen to you. So, shall we do some small groups? Great. So why don't you find a group of, there's 11 people, so I guess that's a couple groups of four and one group of three, right? Yep, that's the math. Are you going to, oh, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Oh, great. So do you want groups of four or three? Three. Great. Beautiful. When you think about, if you think about your practice like an egg with a baby chick inside, how does that affect your commitment or what you think about how you want to care for your practice? And this time, take 2 minutes each. Take your time. I'll ring the bell again. Let yourself pause and sit. And if you sit in silence, that's totally fine. No worries, okay? But just really let yourself, even before you answer, let yourself feel like, okay, like if my practice is an egg, you know, or 10 eggs, you know, I'm sitting on these eggs and there's this, you know, baby chick in there. Like how do I want to treat it, relate to it? How do I want to hold this in a way? How might it affect my commitment or my engagement? So how was that for you? What was your takeaway from that exploration together. There's mics on the floor. Anybody willing to share about what happened in your small group? Did you find yourself inspired, more clarified? Great. Did you? Yeah. That'd be wonderful.
Press the little button there.
It's already.
I think it's already on. Yeah. it was really neat to discuss meditation and everything within the groups, and kind of hear how things kind of come up when you're meditating, and how you you're trying to accept it, you know what I mean, and let it kind of go. We were talking about the day retreat in the meditation, like during that, and you know how it differs from something like tonight and everything. So just hearing the different the different perspectives on how people do things and everything was really interesting, and just kind of how you do have to put in the effort to accomplish this, and you have to practice to accomplish this, and like no one does it perfect, and you just have to keep going and keep trying. So it was just really, really good to hear.
Oh, like, good. It looks like it was encouraging to
yes,
you.
Yes, yes. No, very encouraging.
So
yes.
It supported your faith or your confidence or your hope or your sense of trust in the practice, maybe.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, right. I mean, even after like what you said, you know, what you were saying about, you know, the monk just not developing because he's not, practicing. I'm like, oh, I'm that monk. You know what I mean? Because I've always found the shortcuts and the clever ways of getting out of things, but I can't do that with this.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I have no choice but I have to practice and I have to put in the time. I can't just like 5 minutes.
No shortcuts.
Yeah, exactly.
That's great.
So, yeah.
That's beautiful. Yeah. Anybody else willing to share?
Our group talked quite a bit about just this notion of effort, but the simplicity of it and kind of the day in and day out. And your comment, I assume you were an athlete of some sort. I don't know, but I was. And I also, when we were talking about effort, you know, I thought about, you know, playing tennis, competitive tennis for, you know, 10 years of my life. But it was that day in and day out and the ups and downs. Although that felt very effortful sometimes. It was just, you know, very different. Mm-hmm. But I love that comment because it reminded me of just the consistency.
Yeah.
Maybe coming to it in a different way, at least with my experience.
Great, great. Yes, and so, and you'd go to tennis even if you were tired, right? You have a commitment to your team. You know, you need to show up. And so sometimes you show up on the cushion even though you don't really feel like it.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, I it's time to sit. I've got my commitment. I'm going to sit. And it's okay if I don't hit very many balls back very well, right? This
right.
kind of idea
right.
you that
have your bad days.
You're going to have your bad days. You're going to have, you know, other days. And just like no two tennis practices are the same, no two meditations are the same, right?
Yeah. The other thing we talked about was just that there's meditation, right? But there's practice in
That's right.
daily life. I mean,
That's right.
I know I... I probably think about it more than I do it, but the desire is, you know, to take that experience and my connection to myself and all the other pieces of this and and be in touch with that in my daily life. So that is practice too.
Beautiful. And Sue, when you said something that I really inspired me when I respond to, which is I think about it maybe more than I do it. But anytime you think about practice, all you need to do is just go, oh, and am I aware right now?
That's great.
What am I aware of right now? And then you're practicing. So it doesn't have to be like, you know, think about it and oh, I'm not doing it. It's just like, oh, I'm thinking about it. Okay, what am I aware of? Yeah. That quick, that simple. And then your mind is already reminding you. Maybe it's doing it in a way that is pointing toward you're supposed to be doing something different, right? Based on the way you said that, you know, I had that feeling. But just any time you remember or you think about practice, you think about meditation, you think about the Buddha, you think about the Dharma, you think about the Sangha, stop, open up. What am I aware of right now? Just hold space for it for a minute. Yeah. Beautiful. So my invitation for you is, you don't have to do this, but think about these five qualities. You know, think about your trust or faith or confidence. Which word lands for you? Which of those words, when you think about the practice, feels most comfortable? Trust, faith, confidence. And kind of just in the back of your mind, you might just drop in, like, let's just start with that one, you know, that quality this week, and just sort of pay attention to where it shows up, how it shows up, if it shows up as the opposite of faith, you know, doubt, or, you know, just, I don't know, disbelief, whatever it is. Just kind of get to know how you are right now as a person this week and how the quality of faith, trust, confidence shows up for you around practice, around being aware. Okay? Great. Any final comments or questions before we dedicate the merit of our practice together? All right, let's sit on our little eggs, little chicks on our nests. And take a deep breath and just know right now, what am I aware of? May I stay aware. May I move through life aware. May my being aware support the awareness of others around me. And so on and so forth. And so that may all beings everywhere on this planet be aware, awake, attentive, non-harming, and be free, free from suffering. Thank you for your practice.